would like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Joshua D. from Ramona.
Good evening. My name is Joshua. I'm an alcoholic. And the cliche thank yous to Larry Lade. Is Larry Lade still coming to this meeting for asking me to be here tonight? If I stink it up, you can give him a call. And welcome to the newcomers. I really, really love you guys. I need you guys. You guys are my pictures that I don't have in my big book. It's a tough road. Doing this takes guts. So if it was easy, anybody can do it. And I really want to thank Joe. Joe, you did an awesome job. I could not talk about myself and spend the rest of this hour talking about what that man did for me in my first year of sobriety. Man, we had a really good time together. That man taught me how to have fun. Because if I wasn't have fun, I'd drink a bottle of tequila. I enjoy being sober. It is really freaking fun. You catch me at a Charger game or a Potter game or a NASCAR race, you'd think I'm hammer drunk, though. I'm having a good time. I really, really, really love my life. As cliche as that is, I have a good time. So, I'll just kind of start off how it was for me. As far back as I can remember as a kid, way before I even took a drink of alcohol, I can get everything I wanted for Christmas, and in like 2 hours, it wasn't cool anymore. I looked at you folks and my peers and my friends, and I don't know, just somehow, some way, I knew deep down inside inherently that I felt differently than you did. Those of you who know me personally, I'm sure that this is going to be a great surprise to some of you and not to others. Parent-teacher conferences for me were not too fun. I really have a problem with authority. Parent-teacher conferences where Josh won't sit in his seat, Josh won't be quiet, Josh won't do his homework. And then even into high school, I'm like a good test taker, and right on down to my career today, I'm really, really good under pressure. So through high school, I would like, the teacher would pull me aside and open the grade book, and she'd be like, all right, Josh, if you write this report and this essay and do this, if you do these four things, I'll give you a D. So I just have always had a hard time doing what I was told. As far back as I can remember, restless, irritable, and discontent is just me. So that was even before I took a drink. So I can't really honestly remember my first drink. A lot of people like to talk about it because I could definitely remember the first time I had my own 12-pack of beer. Those shoulders that have been pinned up in my ears my whole freaking life came down. I was 6 foot tall. All that cliche stuff that you hear. I'd like to thank SoCal speakers. Me and Joe got to stand on the same stool tonight. I appreciate that. I got to say it before somebody else does. While I'm thanking, I'd also like to thank the men and women who made the drive down from Ramona for my wife's women's meeting and my men's meeting up there, and all the people that came out to show me support tonight. I've got some really good friends and family here in Alcoholics Anonymous, way better friends than I ever had when I was out there drinking. That's a fact. So back to drinking. I'm going to spare you the consequences of all my drinking. They're pretty much kind of the same for everybody. Basically, what happens to me when I drink is the same thing happens to just about any alcoholic. I can't pronounce anybody alcoholic, but I tell you, when I take a drink, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how many I'm going to drink. I don't know if I'm going to end up in jail. I don't know what's going to happen. The only thing I do know is I'm going to go to work the next morning. That's always... So when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, it was consequence, and I did everything I could to... find all the differences, because I never had the shakes. And even I'm going to get sober twice here in my talk, because both sobrieties are very, very different from one another. One, I was a taker, and one, I was a giver, but we'll get to that in a minute. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't lose all my material stuff, I didn't have the shakes. I wasn't a real big liquor drinker. And I found all these reasons why, don't you understand I'm different, you know? And that kept me away from a sobriety date I could keep for a really long time. And that goes back to being stubborn and not being like told what to do. That's just in my nature. So I'm not standing here tonight that I have any virtue or a strong moral fiber of my own. I'm here out of pain. And that is it. I wish I can't think of anything I've done out of virtue or moral fiber in my whole life. It's all been selfish and self-centered, and I've done the paperwork to prove it. So we'll fast forward through the consequences, and we'll get to the first time I got sober. So August 4th, 2001 is a date I'll never, ever, ever forget, and it's also a date I let go of. I was out on parole. I had no business leaving the county, much less the state. Not probation, parole. After my fifth DUI, I like to go places when I drink. That's a fact. So, the friends and I, let's keep in mind, I know I'm an alcoholic at this point. You know, it was kind of like a badge of honor at that point. I'd done many drive-bys to Alcoholics Anonymous. Obviously, you have to do that to get five DUIs. So August 4th, 2001, I'm out at Martinez, out at Yuma, having a really killer good time and doing what alcoholics do. And that whole under-pressure thing, like, at the end of that day, like, for some reason, 230 racks deep, like, I'm the most sober one to pull the boat out of the water. That's just kind of how it is for me. My motor skills are really good. My common sense is not. It's a fact. So me and my roommate, we're riding in the back of a Ford Ranger because you're in Arizona. You could. This is the only war story I'm going to tell, by the way. And then we'll stay sober after this. You're welcome. I'm riding in the back of a pickup truck, and we're towing a boat. And I've got the important stuff, the beer, right in between me and my roommate. I'm 23 years old, and I'm hungry. And our sandwiches are in that boat. Yeah, you know where I'm going with this. A lot of people don't know this story. It's not one I'm super proud of, but nevertheless, I slap my roommate on the back, and I say, dude, we've been drinking all day. We haven't eaten anything, and I'm hungry. And he goes, we're going to be at the hotel in a half an hour. And I'm like, I want those sandwiches now. And he goes, you're crazy. And I go, I know. And I almost dropped an F-bomb there. I try to jump into the boat while we're going down the road at 65 miles an hour. No chute, no shoes, no service. We're nothing but board shorts, and I was just a little to the left. And keep in mind, this is 2001. This is before social media, and people were zombies with smartphones, and everything was recorded. I wish I had that on video. It would have been really cool. But nevertheless, bless you. I'm a little guy. Don't tell anybody. My, like, torso up is on the boat, and I'm trying to, like, get my leg up, you know. And so just imagine two little legs just dangling about. And the road's going by at 65 miles an hour. And that's just about the only thing that saved me. Because what happened is, as soon as my two little feet hit the ground, the inertia just shot me right up in the air. And I tumbled down the road at 65 miles an hour. And, man, I broke both my ankles, concussion, blood coming out of my ear and the eyes and all that stuff. Spent 11 days in the hospital. And that was my first surrender. Shocker, I know. And after August 4th, 2001, I stayed sober for 5 years. I met some people who are in this room now. Little Joe is one of the few people who knew me in my first round of sobriety. So when I got out of the hospital, I couldn't bear any weight on my feet. I had to rent a hospital bed because my feet had to be above my heart. I couldn't do basic human functions without getting into detail without assistance. And it was rough. It was rough going. But I was willing. And I was willing at that point, and I called up Alcoholics Anonymous. And believe me, I've been around Alcoholics Anonymous a lot before this time. And this was a little bit extreme, but I definitely knew I had a problem with alcohol. So I lived in Escondido at the time. I called up central office, and they sent me an alcoholic at 6:30 in the morning. I'm not going to break this guy's anonymity. I'll tell you a little about him. He was about the age I am now. He had two little ones like I do now. He ran a business, and he was a very, very busy man. He had a lot going on, but he had a primary purpose, and that was to carry the message to another alcoholic who still suffers, and I was that drunk. With about 12 days of sobriety, because I spent 11 days in the hospital, and I think I was probably still drunk for the whole next day, the first day in the hospital. So anyhow, this man comes in my house, never met me, doesn't know me from Adam, and he knocks on my door, and I say, come on in, and I'm there in the hospital bed and the remote control, and you could see the oh crap on his face. He's like, man, what did I get myself into? He goes, so I hear you need to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm like, yeah, I do. So this man scooped me up in his arms. I live in a second-story apartment, carried me down the freaking stairs. He loaded me in his F-250 pickup truck, went back upstairs from my wheelchair, put it in the back of his truck, and he took me to a 7 a.m. meeting. My first home group was, a 7 a.m. Attitudes meeting out up in Escondido. That's where I met your sister. I know most of this man's family. I mean, it's just a really cool moment being here with you tonight, Joe. I love you, man. Anyhow, let's get back on track here. So I stayed sober. I stayed sober August 4th, 2001, and I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. That guy, he picked me up while the entire time I was on a waiting list for the fellowship center. I went into the fellowship center. I lasted there 14 days. I punched a guy in the mouth. I got kicked out, all this stuff, but I stayed sober. I did everything wrong you could possibly do, especially this. Man, I started a young people's meeting out in Leucadia on Friday nights. Still going to this day. I went to a lot of meetings. I went to a lot of sober dances and all that stuff, but this right here was just for patchouli oil wearing hippies that shopped at Whole Foods. I wanted nothing to do with that. I was a leech. I was an AA taker. That's exactly what I was for 5 years. I would scoff at old timers when they come up to me and say, hey, kid, what step are you on? I'd say 0.5. True story. It's my story. Nobody knows it better than I do. Because I was definitely powerless over alcohol. But straight out of high school, I got into a business that afforded me the opportunity to have a lot of material things. Don't you see? My life is not unmanageable. But I'm definitely an alcoholic. I knew that. And on self-will and fear, I reckon, I stayed sober for 5 years. During that time, I moved down to Cabo San Lucas and with about 3 years of sobriety. So when I was living here in the States, all I had was meetings, fellowship, was going to meetings and sitting in a seat. And when I moved down to Mexico, I didn't even have that. I just quit going to meetings altogether. And for the new folks in the room, I'm going to share you the most frightening thing about alcoholism, because my problem is sober. My problem is definitely sober. Because at 5 years sobriety, you see I'm 28 now, you know, grown man. You know, maybe I was just young and dumb. It's going to be different this time. The great obsession of every abnormal drinker. Sober, I will rationalize and justify how a drink is the best thing, the best idea I've got. I towed a big giant fifth wheel down there, and I was living in an RV park that had a little restaurant in the middle, and the same place I've been drinking Sprites for almost 2 years. I remember it distinctly. My brother-in-law is a Boston Red Sox fan. They were playing in the World Series, and I'm on the phone with him just talking smack like men do, and I said to him, dude, I think I want to have a beer. And, of course, he's smarter than I am. He's like, you know, why would you want to do that? And you've been sober for a long time. You're doing real good, man. And the mind of an alcoholic, alcoholism is patient. Man, it's cunning, baffling, powerful, and patient. You know, people want to make stupid analogies about it, how it's like out there in the parking lot doing push-ups and jumping jacks and That's bull crap. It's sitting right. It's in my pocket, learning everything I'm learning, you know, just looking for that weak spot on me. So I came up with a new killer plan of how it's going to be different this time. You know, maybe I just smoke a little more weed, stay away from tequila, you know. Sober, I took a drink. And I wish that pain on every man and woman in this room. I'm not one of those hold it together with a six-pack of beer a night for a couple months kind of guy. And it was that night. It was like I never took a day off. Boom, I'm there. Let's get some cocaine. Right? That night. Excuse me. Powdered alcohol. Outside issues aren't a big part of my story, but I'll do some to drink some more. Why not? So anyhow, 40 years old, I got sober when I was 34. So for the next 6 years, I still went to roundups, because a lot of you folks know my mom. My mom was Cheryl Roberts. She's a wonderful, wonderful woman. She passed away a couple years ago. I would go to roundups, and I'd get the visitor's badge. You know, I mean, I've been going to roundups and doing the sobriety countdown for, you know, years before that. But you see, I'm not an alcoholic anymore. But out of respect, you know, for my mom, I'm going to show up at the roundup, you know, because I'm a good guy like that, you know. Right. So that 6 years, I did a lot of AA drive-bys. I wanted to get sober almost immediately after I started drinking again out of Mexico. I came back from Mexico because I knew I'd end up in a Mexican prison and my mom's health wasn't doing so hot. And this was 2005. They said she only had a few years to live back in 2005. And she just passed away about 3 years ago. Yeah. 2014, 3 years ago. It's my aunt sitting right here. So she beat the clock on that one. And she did really well. So I just did not want what you guys had. I had to have my first step experience in that 6 years over and over and over again. And that's why I'm here out of pain. Like, I know what it's like to wake up in the morning and look at myself in the mirror. And I don't know if anybody else has done this, but I have. I have actually punched myself in the face because I'm just so disgusted with myself. I've sat with a 44 Magnum. I lived in that same fifth wheel right in Leucadia by the railroad tracks, and this little RV park right across from the Leucadian Bar. That's where it all came to an end for me. I used to sit in that fifth wheel all alone. I could pick up my cell phone, scroll through the whole damn thing, and nobody wants to hear my crap anymore. And I wish that on every. I wish you a lot of pain. I used to get so mad at my sponsor when he'd say that to me when I was newly sober, but like that pain is paramount. That step one experience is very, very valuable, and that's why Joey touched on it. Like, I can't help anybody with that. I can't help a man with his first step experience. That's a full-on inside job. And I would daydream in that fifth wheel about either, you know, I'd sit with that 44 in my lap, but then if I, you know, ate a bullet, my family would know, and it would ruin my nephew, and that's, you know. So maybe if I just put my face a couple inches in front of my my feet and just ate an Amtrak train, like I went through all that, like I could not go on living the way I was, and I couldn't imagine my life without alcohol. You know, like it consumed all my time and everything I did. Everywhere I went, I had to pregame. I can count on my hand how many times I've called in sick to work through my 21-year career in construction. I just never called in sick. But I tell you what, as soon as I got in my truck, the very first gas station was getting that cold beer in my lap. So it all came to an end for me. I stopped drinking February 22nd, 2012. My sobriety date is March 2nd. Because I detoxed with marijuana for a couple days with my mom. I did what all tough guys do. When it hit the fan, I called my mother. And she sat with me in my trailer while I detoxed. because, you know, I've refused to go to a hospital or a detox. That pride will kill you. So, and then I knew where to go. I went to Pathfinders. My mother lived two blocks away. She was heavily involved in Pathfinders, and I knew Joe, and so that's where my journey started. At that moment, the only thing I hadn't tried was this. I knew it. That whole 6 years I was drinking in between sobriety dates, I knew it. Deep down inside, every man, woman, and child is that fundamental idea of God. You know when you're fibbing to your parents and you're a little kid and something inside you says, don't do that. You're that's not right. That little voice that all of us have, if you don't, you're a sociopath and don't talk to me. But it's there, you know, right and wrong. Anyhow, so I went into Pathfinders, and for the first time in my life, as far back as I can remember, I decided to do what I was told. It's the only conscious decision I've ever really made that wasn't selfish. It was just painful. I couldn't do it anymore. I was totally out of fight. So the first year of my sobriety, I had to take, a sabbatical from work. I was in a men's recovery home. And fortunately, there's many here that knew me, so I have to stay honest about my first year of sobriety. I wasn't down at Balboa Park playing frisbee golf. I never once went to dinner at Turning Point, and I could say that with honesty. I wasn't chasing them girls. I wasn't playing frisbee golf. I was there to take the steps. It was a safe place for me to take the steps. And I hung out with little Joe almost every day, man. Man, big tower crane operator went to pulling weeds at little Joey's house. You want to talk about humble pie, that's humble pie. You try cleaning windows and you suck at cleaning windows, kid. Man, every time somebody says the word potential, I think of little Joe. Because we'd be driving around in his truck, and he'd say, you got potential, kid. You know what that means? You ain't worth a lick right now. That's a fact, Jack. So I got this sponsor. I believe I'm going to touch on the sponsor-sponsee relationship because I believe it's very paramount. I didn't get a sponsor for his name or because he was sponsoring a bunch of guys and he was a dude to go to. I was rather patient about the man I was going to ask for help. I sat back in meetings and I waited for somebody to speak my language. That's all I was looking for because I'd been around Alcoholics Anonymous long enough to not be one of those D-bags that says, show me where it says that in the book. I was just going to do what I was told. So I waited around for this dude after a meeting, and I asked him for some help. And this man, who at that day was a complete and total stranger, is family to me now. But it wasn't that way in the beginning. In the beginning, he was rather mean to me. He really didn't care about how I felt. He was kind of, it comes from that old school AA that Joe was talking about. All my friends and Pathfinders are getting a sponsor and they're going down to the park and they're getting on their knees and they're holding hands and they're coming back to them. They're on their four-step inventory. And my mean sponsor, he's like, you're not picking up a pen. Do you memorize that prayer on page 63, kid? So I open it up and it says right there, If expressed without reserve, the words are wording is optional. And I brought that up to him, and he literally thumped me on the forehead. And he said, memorize the prayer, kid. He was mean. So I memorized the prayer. And I made it my job. I'm a minimum output, maximum return kind of guy. Fact. being honest here. It's funny. It's funny when you take a man through his fourth and fifth step, and every time I'm doing it with another man, like I bring up my inventory and I show him, you know, like, so that mostly know, so they know I'm not full of crap. They know I've done the work and I've done the paperwork, and it's just I make the first page for him anyway. But it's funny. The stuff that you, excuse me, I hate it when people do that. The you statements used to bug me when I was new. Anyhow, the stuff that I wrote about in my first year of sobriety that really used to get under my skin is just funny now. Like, there's no way I can get from Pathfinders to where I am today if against my will, this patchouli oil, pippy, Whole Foods crap didn't work for me. Like, I had full-on contempt prior to investigation that this just would not work for me. Don't you understand? My case is different. So I went through this. I went through this recovery home, and I took the steps while I was there. As soon as I did my fifth step, my sponsor, just really beat that primary purpose into me. It's cool. I started reading the book and working with new guys, and then I moved into Joey's apartments, and Dave back there was my neighbor for a little while, and because I was still a dirtbag, I didn't have a valid driver's license, I was going to DUI classes, so I had to live close enough to where I could walk to Pathfinders. My world was really, really small. My buddy Dave picked me up and took me to La Mesa Men's every Friday night. But when I got into freedom outside of Pathfinders, I doubled down, you know. I just redoubled my efforts. I was super hungry, and I got hooked up with the men at La Mesa Men's. And I had fun. Like, every night, every Friday night, I go to La Mesa Men's, and it's the only place I truly belly laugh. Like, I look back on my first year of sobriety, and I had a lot of fun. Like, I was so worried, newly sober, like, what am I going to do with all my time? And today, I just wish there were more hours in the day, you know? So I got some freedom back, and life happened for me. You know, there's good days, there's bad days, and sometimes there's just days. And, man, I've had my happiest days and my worst days in sobriety, you know. And life happens, you know. And people throw around that phrase, pain being the touchstone to all spiritual growth, and I definitely know what that touchstone is, and it's not the pain. The touchstone is me. If you look up the definition of that word, a touchstone, back when they used to make swords in medieval times, when they didn't have guns, they used swords, they would test the strength of these swords on a piece of granite, the touchstone. The blacksmith would smack this sword up against the stone to make sure it wouldn't break in battle. And when we go through painful times in sobriety, we are that touchstone. And what makes me be able to walk through life is that stupid thing it talks about in the book, is how spiritually fit we are. And that's why I come to meetings. That's why I love working with dudes and hate it at the same time. And anybody who sponsors dudes really knows what I'm talking about here, because it's so time consuming and nobody wants to do any work. And I see me and all those guys that don't want to do anything. Because that 5 years I spent sober, just hanging out in meetings, taking up a seat, putting a dollar in the basket, I was just a selfish taker. And having walked through that, it's so easy to spot. But I don't say no. I just, you know, I keep working with new dudes. So about 2.5 years of sobriety, life gets really, really cool. You know, I'm not living next door to Joe anymore. It was cool getting out of there, to be honest. Man, we've had our differences, but I love that dude, bro. So cool to have you here tonight. Anyhow, so I moved to Pacific Beach and to get away from my mom, because I lived in South Park and she lived in Golden Hill, and I just, you know, I'm an AA, she's an AA, and I needed some space, you know. So I move over to Pacific Beach, and like 2 months later, she moves to Pacific Beach, like 2 blocks away from my house. So God has got a funny, funny sense of humor. Mine does, anyhow. So while I was living at Pathfinders, my mom's health started going downhill again, you know. And I hate to keep bringing it, but like, okay. She went to the hospital 3 or 4 times when I was in Pathfinders. Like, they cut all kinds of slack for me to go visit my mom in the hospital when I had these mandatory meetings and, you know, spaghetti dinners and whatever that you got to go to when you live in a recovery home. But they cut me all kinds of slack. And, dude, this man carted me around to the hospital to go see my mom. And he didn't particularly like her. A whole lot. She's a very, very close hugger. I don't know. Kind of a long hugger, you know, like, when are you going to let go kind of hugger. Bless her heart. Yeah. I'm here to tell you the truth. And then, like, out of nowhere, like, her health got really good. She started going to the beach. She lost a lot of weight. She got a boyfriend, got a tan, and there wasn't a cloud in the sky. And she was my neighbor, and sort of, you know, a couple blocks away, and I'd swing by and talk to her and, you know, work on that amends. Holy cow. Good thing I got sober. And just like any other day, my aunt, who's sitting right here, calls me up on a Friday, and she's like, you know, I haven't heard from your mom in a couple days. Can you swing by her house and check on her? And I didn't tell my aunt, but every time she'd drive by my house, she'd honk her horn. And I was a cigar smoker at the time. I knew she'd driven by my house the day before because she honked her horn at me. She had a PT Cruiser, and I just knew what that horn was. So I didn't think anything of what my aunt said, but sure. So this was August 8th. So it was hot. And at the time, I had a job where I could bring my pit bull to work with me. And I remember I pulled up to my mom's house, and it was hot for PB. It was probably 81 or 82 or something, and that's really hot. Now I know what hot is. I live in Ramona. But so I pulled up to the house, and her car's in the driveway, so I don't think nothing of it. I leave my truck and park because I got my dog in there, and I knock on the door, and there's nothing, and I look in the window, and I can see her laying on the couch. I holler a couple times, and my heart starts beating. And I pull the screen off, and sure enough, dude, it's time to be that touchstone. My mom, my homie, she was cold. Like, I knew, I was a fire explorer in high school, and they have this thing called DNR, do not resuscitate, and police code for us, 1144, and I called up the fire department, and so I don't know what to do in these situations. You know, I'm 2.5 years sober. I'm still, man, I rambled too long, but I got a long, long, long way to go. Like, I am still a dirtbag. I'm just less of a dirtbag. If there was a time to drink, that would have been it. So, my buddies, after I called the 911 and my wife to come down, and I called my two best friends in Alcoholics Anonymous, the Daves. And they said, do you want us to come? And I'm like, I don't know what the SOP is here. That's standard operating procedure, if you didn't know. I don't know. And before they pulled my mom out of the house, they were there. And we didn't go home after that. We went to La Mesa Men's. It was a Friday night. After they pulled my mom out, I looked at Dave and Dave, and I said, what do we do now? And they said, what do you think we do? We go to La Mesa Men's. And that's what we did. We cruised to La Mesa Men's, And all the men at that meeting, it's a very large men's meeting. And if you got a pair of cojones, I hope you come say hi to us. It's a two-hour meeting. Yeah. But it goes by like that. I laugh my... I made it pretty good without cussing, but I laugh really hard at that meeting. Let's put it that way. Have a good time. We have a kitchen area back there, and I didn't go have a seat, but I tell you what, just about every man, because the word had traveled, just about every man in that room at some point during that meeting turned around, looked me in the eye, gave me the dude nod, you know. The one that we dudes get pissed about when you don't give it back, you know, like, yeah, better return that dude nod. It's a big deal. Sensitive, don't you know? So, I don't know. That was like, I knew. I knew already, but I really knew then, you know, that you people are my tribe, you know, like the people I hung out with in between the two sobriety dates and my high school buddies, you know, they're not friends. I talked to my one best friend from like middle school. He's the only person I have contact with. I got two men's groups here. Drove all the way down here from Mona. My wife's woman's group here. Like, when my mom passed away, none of those people even picked up the phone. You know, but the people of Alcoholics Anonymous, it was freaking annoying. Like, oh, you know, because they cared. They genuinely cared. You know, I did not want to take another phone call. So many freaking people were calling me to check on me. And then it gets better. 1 week later, exactly to the day, my wife's dad died. She's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. 2 weeks after that, September 3rd, our first kid was born. My mom, her dad, missed their grandkid by inches in the grand scheme of life. Needless to say, it was kind of quiet around our house. You know, we're both going through pain on all spectrums of life. And it was rough. But again, I just kept doing what I was told. There were men in these rooms whose mothers had died. There are men in these rooms who had kids. There are men in these rooms who weren't getting along with their wives. There are men in these rooms that had the solution for a cat like me. You know? And not much has changed. I recently turned 5, and people talk about the pop or whatever. I don't know anything about that pop. I mean, I could be a dirtbag. The good part about being a dirtbag is I have a solution to it. You know, like I know what I strive to be like because I listen to that little voice that I try and get closer to every day. I say the third step prayer every day. I thank my sponsor for drilling that into me and making me learn that prayer and the seven-step prayer. My creator, I'm now willing that you have all of me, good and bad. I pray now that you remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. That's a powerful prayer right there. And there's a prayer for every single ailment, problem. Did you guys know that when the big book says ask, that's a prayer right there. Perhaps this man is spiritually sick. God, save me from being angry. Thy will not mine be done. There's a tool for all of it. God, I ask that you remove this fear from me and guide and direct my attention towards what you would have me be. That's the fear prayer. There's a fear prayer. There's an anger prayer. There's a sick man's prayer. That word ask, if you didn't know, go back and pick up your book. See how many times it says ask. There's a lot of prayers in there. There's a lot of tools for every little problem we have, Alcoholics Anonymous. And we are spoiled alcoholics. I got to shut up, don't I?
2 minutes.
All right. You know, back when the first 100 started this deal, that's why it was Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why you had to have a sponsor, to somebody to bring you to these meetings. These were held in freaking basements. Because if you were a doctor or a lawyer or a tower crane operator and they found out you're an alcoholic, you're unemployed. You know? We couldn't have the AA app, you know, on our phone. I mean, like the first 100 men and women, they 12-stepped. That's what they did. And so at 5, that's what I've learned more than anything is, damn, I have a long, 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 long way to go. You know, I've got so much growing to do. I'm just a baby in this program. What an honor it is with such little time to be able to come here and share my story, because my story is just my story. Everybody in here has got a cool story. I'm just a lucky guy that gets to tell it, you know. But if you're sober and you're hearing my voice and you're new, I'm going to wrap it up with this, and you're asking yourself, am I alcoholic or not? Here's your sign. Saturday night, that average-tempered drinker in his kitchen who just finished his first and a half glass of wine and set it down never asks himself, am I alcoholic or not? They don't ask themselves that question. So if you can hear my voice and you can see my face, here's your sign. Give it a shot. If this dirtbag can do it, anybody can. Thanks.